Welcome to the Banking Reinvented podcast. Every week, we discuss how banks can progressively modernize their customer journeys and model business operations around their customers. You're listening to Tim Rutten, and I'll be joined by Backbase CEO and founder Jouk Pleiter and other senior banking leaders from around the globe. Ready to unpack how to re-architect banking together? Let's get started. Welcome to another episode of Banking Reinvented, the podcast for changemakers, as you all know. And today, I am really excited because we have Thomas Fuss in the room here, the CTO of Backbase. Thomas, good to see you here.
Hi, Tim. Thanks for having me on the call.
Before we dive into anything, maybe it's good to have a bit of a backstory on your experience, your background. We know that you've been with ING for quite a few years. I think you were a co-founder of Payconiq, if I'm not mistaken. So it might be nice to just get a bit of a view on what led you to becoming the CTO of Backbase.
Absolutely, absolutely. Happy to share. Yeah, I think a bit of a background. I think I've always been super passionate about the web, the internet, everything that goes around. And very early on, I actually ended up with ING, a big European bank, and I started joining them in Germany. And the business model in Germany was being a direct bank. So it was completely online, no physical branches, nothing, which really played to what I was interested in, which is really everything around the internet and find different ways of engaging, interacting. And it really appealed to me. And that's how I ended up at ING, because I saw a bank that was really fundamentally trying to do something different. And it was a very exciting journey. I think at that moment in time, the bank was roughly growing around 250,000 customers a year. So had quite a significant growth journey because it was so different from all the individual banks that were very much brick and mortar. And then over time, of course, I started growing within the bank, and I got exposed also to the more traditional side of the bank, which in other countries was very traditional, very branch-centered. So I was able to see also that transformation from being very physical to becoming very digital, high frequency touch point. And it's been a fantastic journey going on that digital transformation and making all these experiences. And I think then eventually I was asked also to help disrupt the bank itself. So ING was very progressive, and we looked at leveraging open banking, and therefore I co-founded Payconiq, which is an omni-channel payment service provider. And so throughout my entire career, it's been all about the internet, creating digital experiences that really disrupt and change the way people are banking. So I was always very interested also in the financial services part. And eventually I ended with Backbase, and that was just for me a logical continuation of what I've been doing before, and then really taking it maybe also to a global scale and really getting excited about different types of challenges all around the globe. From maybe if you look more towards the West and the US, where it's still, let's say, very physical and a bit more old school, versus you go to Asia and you see the rise of the super apps, and it's a complete different type of experience. So it has been a fantastic ride. And that's a little bit my background. So I've been always very much on the digital forefront and the change and the disruption of it. And at Backbase, I love the fact that we really are a digital disruptor and helping banks to go on that journey.
And also remember from your early days in Backbase, you were really hands-on in project implementation time, basically helping them to really transform and implement the platform of Backbase, right?
Yeah, exactly. So actually, especially in the first 2 years at Backbase, I was really leading implementations all around the globe, helping in the field with our product, together with the customers, together with our partners, to lead these digital transformations. And that's been a fantastic learning curve, because I think it's very easy to think you know it all. But then actually really going into the field, really talking to people, getting to know their challenges, getting to know what is it, the opportunities they see. And again, if you look at the global scale, there's different challenges. So it's been a fantastic way. So indeed, in the first 2 years, I really spent the time with the customers. I built out our own customer success organization. And eventually then after that, I transitioned into the CTO role, where I think I heavily applied all the insights that I've learned until today. I really challenge myself to be out there, talk to customers, work with our own customer success organization, work with our partners, and to never lose a touch and see what are the real problems we can solve as Backbase.
And we'll dive into a few of those for today's episode. But again, really good to have you here. We're going to dive into the topic of data, which is an opportunity, but also a major challenge for a typical traditional bank. But before we do, I first wanted to highlight one of the observations of last week that once more resonated with me, at least. And that's the one from Monzo Bank. And indeed, in many of the episodes, we speak of the neobanks, but there is so clear momentum with these institutions that it just makes sense to mention them here. There was the call out that 1 in 5 UK adults is now using Monzo Bank as their primary bank at this moment in time, which brings them to number 7 in the total of UK. And if you look at the actual numbers, that's 10 million customers. If they would double that amount, which is definitely achievable, they're going to be number two, where the number one is 30 million. So effectively, I'm once more seeing this case is not Revolut, but it's Monzo, that they really have traction and they just keep on growing with great unit economics.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's exciting to see, right? So I think we looked at them for a long time as, yes, innovators and yes, very inspiring, but maybe not necessarily as, look, is it a real threat? Are they really gaining market share? And now I think we're seeing that they're gaining real market share and they become relevant players in our industry. And I think Monzo indeed is just one example. I think if you look at Revolut, who has close to 40 million users that they acquired in a time frame of 9 years, which is crazy numbers. Or if you look at, of course, with Brazil, you look at Nubank, which is around 100 million users in the digital banking space. So very exciting. I think it feels a bit like this is the third wave for me. I think we've seen the first wave where neobanks came in, and I think they largely disrupted also the way they interacted with their customers through marketing and their branding. And then I think came the second phase. There was a bit of a reality check and their growth got hampered because regulation kicked in and they had to have their own learning curve. And now I feel like we're in wave three, where actually they're really scaling. And the reason why they're really scaling is because they used to be very nicely looking banks, but then they actually had one product, maybe a debit card, a credit card. They had an interesting savings account. But now they're really venturing in growing their product portfolio, solving more aspects of the customer life cycle. Many of them are also venturing now into business banking, which they haven't done before. So they're, in one way, they're really venturing into becoming a full service bank. And therefore, I think it is not a question if, but only when they really be amongst the top banks in the world. And I think this just, for me, amplifies what I've been saying for a long time, especially if you are an older bank or a more traditional bank. I think you are no longer in a position to say, I'm not doing anything, or I'm still counting on the fact that if my parents have banked with this bank, the kids will do as well. I think you have to move. You have to learn from what they're doing. And I think still every bank has a strong card to play if it plays to the values, but it also embraces what are the things these neo banks are really driving, which is largely really high frequency touch points through personalization and through service any moment in time, any place. And I think really getting to know their customers intimately. So yeah, I think these stats don't lie. I think they're just going to keep on growing, and Monzo is not the only one. I think there's many on the rise. I think we don't see a lot of neo banks, that's also fair to say, but we do see the first wave really starting to scale. So that's very exciting.
Yeah, there's definitely the few chosen ones that are making it happen. Now that's a perfect tee up to the content of this episode, which is all about data. And if you think about data, then especially with yourself being the CTO here at Backbase, we have always had data in any of the implementations we've done. Data has been around, of course, since day one when the bank started to becoming more digital. But I think the challenge has always been, also to my own personal experience, how do you bring it all together and then drive meaningful value out of it? And perhaps to unpack it for the episode to begin with, what is data to you in the context of banking? Where does it start?
A very good question. So where does it start? I think in the most simple form, data today, we look at it as something very transactional. So because we need data, because it defines how we present, for example, the account information, the type of transactions we're doing. But it's very simple today. Data is something we treat as something transactional, but not something that is actually really personal. It's just very immaterial. It's just something to do our day-to-day banking, but it's not necessarily something that drives fundamental value. That's, I think, the key observation, that how it's treated today. While then if we look a bit beyond banking, I think everyone has been talking around, oh, data is the new gold. It helps you to capitalize, it helps you to innovate. I think that's a reality check that we haven't really seen in banking till only recently, I would argue. But today, data is very transactional. But I think moving forward, it plays a different role because we want to go out of transactional banking into something which is more human, which is more personalized, and therefore we need to look at it in different ways rather than it just being something attached to a person. It's something that tells a story about the person. And I think already 20 years ago, I think Bill Gates made a statement that he said something along the lines, the success of a company will be defined on its ability to manage its data. And I think this statement will become very true nowadays because I think we are looking at ways to service our customers that require a different way of looking at them, servicing them, and that requires unlocking this data. And so today, data is very much operated in silos. I think we've been talking about this for a long time. And then I think for the past 10 years, we've been talking about unlocking this data, bringing it unified to the glass. So for example, that if I would go to a branch, I would have the same information as if I would have on the mobile. But that wasn't necessarily putting data into correlation and deriving new insights. And that's what we're trying to accomplish now. And that's a turning point that we're on, that we have to truly unlock this data and bring it in a single way, in a way that can be transformed into unlocking value. And I think that's a situation we're experiencing right now, is that the way we look at it used to be very transactional, and we try to bring it to the glass. And now we look at it as in there's potential there, and how do we unlock it? So that's, I think, a little bit the situation today. Now the question is a little bit, that sounds all logical. Why are we not moving? I think the challenge here is that the data of customers today either resides in legacy systems that are 20 years old, and they were never meant to expose this data or repurpose data, this data in different means. Or it already exists in, for example, new players like fintechs that are helping us with transaction categorization, for example. And then how is this information truly flowing back and I can leverage it? So actually, our landscape is not necessarily becoming easier. It's becoming even more difficult, because on the one hand, we have this super legacy systems that are saying basically, this data only belongs to me and no one else. And on the other hand, we have fintechs who are doing all sorts of crazy transformations, and there's potential future gold in it. And banks are not necessarily in a position to then bring this in-house and then correlate it again. So I think there's a very complex environment that requires new problem solving, new technologies that can really help to unlock that gold that we believe in is in this data. And that's why, for example, in Backbase today, we really heavily first started not just investing in a data layer, but also in capabilities to bring data out of any system into our data lake. So for example, with our Grand Central proposition, which is an integration platform as a service, we are virtually able to retrieve information from your most traditional core bank that doesn't have any APIs. It could have just flat files. It could be your ERP. It could be anything. We are able to take this information and then provision it not just to our own Backbase platform, but actually also to any type of third-party layer that we see there. So in our case, for example, the Backbase data platform. So that's where it starts. So we're trying with the Backbase really to untangle this complexity by embracing, first of all, the fact that there is legacy. It's not going to disappear tomorrow. And you do not have the time to wait for this complexity to be resolved. That's going to take probably another 10 years. But you have to think about transitional stages. And so we really invest into capabilities to allow us to bring data in. And then in our own data proposition, we really try to harmonize this data to a single view that is also correlating customer information to transactional information, to third-party information, and that allows us then to derive new value out of it. So in a long story, I think this is really the journey, the challenges that we see, and a little bit how we're trying to tackle that.
Very nice introduction to the whole topic. If we bring this back to the different traditional banks that are looking to either move into this journey or perhaps already have done certain investments or certain, you mentioned, crazy transformations, what have been the different flavors over the past 5 to 10 years to get to a better state with their data?
I think the number one movement has been, I think, not investing. I'll be very honest. I think that's still the biggest change. No, but of course we have seen plays. So I think we have seen core banking modernizations that unlocked some of this value. We have seen banks investing in CRMs. Like I said, we've seen banks hollowing out the core, using more fintech players. But like I said, it sometimes rather added to the complexity rather than it being a solution. And then we have seen some more advanced banks definitely also investing into their own data capability. So they have invested into their own data mart. They have started to invest into their own data lake solutions. But I think a lot of them still have struggled to see real return on investment coming out of these investments at the end of the day, because I think they brought it into a single place, but then they left it there, or they didn't necessarily have either both, let's say, the talent, the skill side, or let's say maybe technology was not at the point where it really helped in a relatively simple way to build correlations out of this data, unify it, Well, then what I think is very important nowadays is also how you democratize this data. And what I mean by that is a bank may have invested into their own data capabilities today, but they sit with a single team in the organization. And that creates instantly another bottleneck. And that single team is supposed to help deriving insights, for example, for the customer service center, is supposed to help the chief digital officer defining new segments, it's supposed to help defining efficiency goals. It's a bottleneck. And in the end, I think what you want to accomplish is like, what's the baseline? What's your common shared data source that is unified to a certain level, but then empowers other people, virtually anyone in the organization, to derive value out of this themselves. And I think that is where it's a bit stuck today. I think we've seen a lot of investments that try to bring it into a single place, but I don't think it has evolved necessarily from there. I think we have seen, of course, we have seen a lot of banks, and not just banks, everywhere, companies investing in basic business analytics, creating some predefined metrics and deriving them from the data. But we haven't seen really a lot of banks using data also for exploration. So actually not just looking at metrics that you already know, but actually finding things that are not known to you that have huge potential to unlock efficiency within the organization, or hopefully also derive value for the end consumers or growth potential for the bank. So I think that's a little bit where it stopped for even the ones that have invested early and they are already on a journey. I think it often stopped there where it became a central place. It became a siloed move once again. It struggled with the complexity that data is just growing. And yeah, maybe also, especially from a technology point of view, it was overwhelming. And therefore, maybe also the tooling was not there to help you easily gain new insight from that. And that's a bit where we are today, I think.
Just playing back on what you're sharing here and referring also back to Chris Cheyenne, who shared, typically there were these larger scale programs that after 1 or 2 or 3 years would have a bank end up with a data lake. And all of a sudden that data lake was there. Potentially there's a central team that's holding the key to it, but it's actually yet another bottleneck. But also the other challenge is that it took you a few years to get there with all the investments, with all the talent, and you're still not unlocking the actual value. Is there a play, or maybe that's already the part that you shared, where you can do this smaller, faster to unlock value, not at the large scale data lake view, but perhaps even go use case by use case?
Yeah, I think there's also a bit two philosophies to that. I think there's two plays to it. I think you see often companies striving for the fact, no, we need to get all data first before we can do anything. But that means if we go back to just a plain landscape of systems where data is locked in today, that means indeed you're probably busy for 2-3 years unlocking this data. And there's the other school of thought, which is to say, look, you can also look a little bit from the point of view as what's the type of insight you want to gain and who's the persona, what are some of the business cases, and you start to go almost like when we talk about our platform, about the progressive journey modernization. I think also here you can go on a progressive data journey where actually over time you focus on a bit the 80-20 rule. Of course, you want to probably have your core banking information in this data lake because it holds a lot of valuable information. You want to have the data from the EBP, which is maybe way more natural to acquire. So I think you have to also look at what is the value you're trying to get at. You have to also see how can I prove value out of it. And it does sometimes it means also maybe not going for the holy grail and saying, I need to know every single bit of data. But I actually start to say, okay, so what are maybe the 80-20 rule? What is it I really want to drill into? And then how I can start to derive from this data some value. And if I see bias in it, or I see a level of lack of accuracy, and I can look at what is supporting data. And so I think that's been one of the challenges. I think that's why we have seen programs that are 2-3 years long. I think number one reason why they are long is just plainly getting access to this data. They are locked up, right? So they are in core banking systems that don't want you to have this data almost. And the other thing is also, let's say, almost going for perfection, saying I cannot work with this unless I have all the data. But I think I'd worry first about generating value out of it before striving for 100% accuracy, because you can refine accuracy and supply it with additional data to drive accuracy. And I think that's one of the pitfalls I think we've also seen, is that almost that, say, I cannot do anything else before I know everything. And maybe also, of course, in banking, we're all risk averse. So maybe that's a bit our heritage out of that one. But I think innovation comes through exploration and incremental innovation. And therefore, you maybe have to also look at like, how do you go progressively on this journey? The same way you're modernizing your digital experience, you should also maybe think about going on this journey a bit at an incremental scale.
Is it fair to say that the progressive approach, was that already available 5 years ago, that type of technology to do it progressively, really make it small, modular, go fast? Or is that something that's a bit more recent, perhaps, given where the technology layers are today?
Look, I think it's gotten easier because there's now software in place that allows us to work that way way more efficient. So, for example, we have our integration platform as a service. We work heavily, for example, with Microsoft Fabric, like a real nice data solution that provides out-of-the-box ETL capabilities, data transformation capabilities. So tooling has become way more available, consumable. The learning curve for skill has lowered dramatically. But I think still, even then, the biggest challenge you have is that mindset change, right? So I think technology is an enabler, but it's not necessarily the one that is truly going to define whether you're going to be successful on the journey or not. That is actually also that progressive modernization mindset that you have to bring to the table, and changing that throughout your organization. And then certainly, I think it will go fast a lot more than it used to be 5 years ago, because software has evolved rapidly. There's more talent in the market. Like I said, also that the tooling requires less of a learning curve. You have to invest way less in plumbing versus exploiting maybe some of these SaaS solutions at the end of the day. So I think, yes, technology has become more available, more approachable, and therefore it is accelerating the journey, but it doesn't change the fact that you have to have that mindset, which is not completely risk averse, but it's actually really a value-driven mindset.
Very clear. Now, if you fast forward and you imagine that you're in a context where you have a data lake in place and you have a very nice centralized view of your data, and let's imagine it's also use case based progressively, what does it really unlock? Like you talked about value quite a few times, but let's take a few examples or use cases perhaps where you say, this is where it really hits home given where we are today in banking.
Look, there's so many. Let's take the first one. I think a lot of banks believe they know who their customers are, but they don't. I also remember out of my very early days, I think we were heavily advertising young professionals just to figure out that our key demographic and the most valuable clients were the mid-40s, like many banks, right? So high income, mid-40s. And that was also our customer base, which was very interesting because we were a complete direct bank. And you would think it was a very young demographic, but it turned out to be actually still the 40-year plus high income. And so I think data provides that insight, right? First of all, it can really help a bank understand, who are your customers today? Is it actually who you want it to be? Maybe that also requires changing your proposition. So I think it creates informed insights around your customer segmentation, how you're doing in that segmentation, who are your key customers, and the type of growth opportunities that provides, right? So I think that's the biggest one, I think. The second one is, we were talking earlier about all the neobanks and how they're growing. I think they master this aspect of leveraging data and deriving insights. And I think the two key domains that they're really excelling in is, number one, creating tailored value propositions. So really, first of all, I think the whole product offering is based on the insights they have about their demographic. But then also, I think you can clearly see in all of these neobanks that it becomes way more about Tim as a retail customer, or for example, Backbase as a customer of a bank, rather than this generic person, and I'm trying to propose all sorts of product to you, which actually have no meaning because you're not the right target customer. So I think data can really drive a new value propositions. It can make it more tailored, more unique to yourself. And the other thing is, we can turn banking from something very reactive to something very proactive. And what I mean by that is, I think we can use machine learning, for example, to really start predicting live events or certain scenarios. I always make the same example. I think with machine learning, we can, with a high level of accuracy, we can predict how much money you're going to have by the end of the month. So we can already predict you today, whether you maybe going to run short and you want to have some overdraft protection, or maybe you have some money left to spend, which would be amazing. And you would want to put that money to good use and put it into an ETF today. So I'm, for example, myself, a customer of one of these new banks, and that's exactly what they do to me. It's actually, they clearly are managing my cash and my net worth and give propositions around that. And I think really that action insights-driven motion is the one that data is really unlocking. So it turns reactive banking, which is just saying like customer self-servicing. It's very transactional. You schedule paying your electricity bill to actually saying, hey, you have some money left to spend. Do you want to put it good use and maybe plan for retirement, plan for your next car, make it work for you rather than just let it sit there. So I think that's just, let's say, on the customer facing side, really what I see, more tailored value propositions, actions and insights that turn banking from reactive to proactive. And maybe on the bank internal side, like I also said, I think it helps us to actually understand who our customers are. Maybe also really make decisions on that one. What are growth opportunities? Not just the customer segment, but also the products. Where can you actually compete? Where you can have a competitive edge at the end of the day? But these are just some examples. I think the sky is the limit at the end of the day. I think, but first you have to put yourself in a position that you can do these things. And maybe interesting side note, I think we've been talking about data and the fact that it resides in silos, that it becomes more complex, and that today we've been struggling to get value out of it. There's a nice research from, I believe it's Accenture, where I think around a bit more than 50% of the banks are actually saying we're not in a position to actually leverage data and generate value from it. And I think that is a sign of that moving yourself first into a place that you can actually unlock this value is still key today. And I know there's a lot of hype, and we talk about using generative AI and using machine learning in itself. Like, just that whole notion, I think, is real. It can have massive impact. But if you're not in a position to execute on it, you're actually already on the back foot. And really, like I said, I think I heard this statement in the past. I truly believe in this. The way you're able to manage your data in the organization is going to define whether you'll be successful moving forward. And of course, we know, again, from the neobanks that they don't have 50 years of legacy. So they come from a completely different spot. They're way more comfortable with this. I think also their DNA, maybe their talent, is in a different space at this moment in time. So they'll be massively capitalizing on it. And so also, I think data and then subsequently AI is a space that if you are not going to adopt and start innovating quickly, you could be caught on the back foot quite heavily in this. I think you were saying like Monzo's on the path to become number two in the UK. Who says they won't be number one? So I think there's no reason why they wouldn't, and because of the way they're operating. And yeah, that's it. So I think data, massive opportunities to both help the bank to grow, retain, create new value for the customers, but also help to drive operational efficiencies and really turning the bank inside out at the end of the day.
Yeah, if I may summarize a little bit what you've shared so far, especially on the, so what's the value? Let's imagine you're in a position where you have the data in place and you can actually start delivering capabilities that really help you grow the bank. I would say on the customer side, you basically say, number one, understand the customer. That's where it starts. Because at this moment in time, most likely you do not understand your customer as much. Also, the ING example that you shared is interesting because we typically also meet banks that don't even fully know where are they making the best impact in their customer segments and where should they optimize for. So that's number one. The second one is tailored value propositions. I think that's really the moment where, because you know the segment really well, you can also start optimizing the value proposition for that segment and basically increase your share of wallet, increase your product penetration. Let's say on average, you're maybe on 0.8 products or 1.2. Maybe you want to double that amount on the average population of your cohort. I would even dare to say that's typically how the Netflixes and others with real platform economics are looking at their business. It's like very much SaaS heavy almost. It's definitely something that a bank could also achieve once they move into that paradigm. And then the last one I think is most powerful. It moves from reactive to proactive. We discussed this as well with Roland Boye in one of the previous episodes when the markets really tanked over one day of trading, like 20% down, 30% down. And none of the applications, none of the banks that we were banking with actually helped us to be informed about the situation. None of them. And I think there it really hits home that, yeah, let's imagine where it is as proactive as you share. The bank really has that prime position to help you do better in your financial life. So if I conclude all of that in the episode for this time round, you basically say, let's first get into a position where value is actually being captured from the data. Because there's data everywhere, it's in silos, it's in legacy systems, it's actually becoming more and more complicated or more complex. So this is the moment to have a strategic view on how do I abstract value from it. And I would say there the two key pointers that you shared is, one, you can go all the way and go big bang and take a few years and have a perfect data lake. You can definitely go that route and it's been there for quite a few years already. or you can consider to go 80-20. Let's say Pareto efficient, take the data use cases that you really need to drive something towards your end customers. And what's also there, what you're building with Backbase is the integration platform as a service fabric, where you can step by step bring the right data together to drive end-to-end value propositions for customers that are on the platform, as an example. So yeah, wrapping it up, I think it's really about getting into a position where you can first of all have the data to start delivering value, and only then you can entertain, let's unlock AI. Let's unlock all these new patterns that are really capturing the market by hype, I would say. But before you can get there, you really need these primary basics in place. Anything you would add, Thomas, or double down on?
Yeah, I absolutely agree with your summary. I think first one I would really say is you have to move. This is the time. Market pressure is there. Customer expectations rapidly changing. Do it. Start going. Start going small, but start going, number one. And I think start working from a value point of view. Don't think about it as an IT program. Think about it as a growth opportunity, as an efficiency opportunity. Think about it as an opportunity. So first of all, go keep going. Think about it not as a tech program. Data is, yes, it's a very technical topic. You will get confronted with all sorts of technology problems, but it's not a tech problem. It's a strategic pillar in your digital transformation and in your availability, in your ability to be competitive in the market. So that's number one. And the second one is then really like start also unlocking that value through experimentation, incremental unlock of this innovation potential, and then keep refining it and keep enriching this data over time to drive accuracy and then enable little by little more use cases. And I think hopefully soon we'll also talk about AI one more time again. I think nothing prevents you from going on this journey today, but you have to think in something that is achievable. You have to think in something that is valuable to you today. Maybe that fixes also your biggest pain point. Maybe as a bank, growth is not even your biggest pain point. It could be also just your cost side of the house. But you have to get going. You have to compartmentalize and you have to experiment. And it's very important that over time, you end up in a place where data is coming from every single system, not just new systems, but also the legacy systems. It's unified in a place. And lastly, I'm very adamant about this one. I think data needs to be democratized, that it can be consumed by virtually anyone in your organization, so that you don't create another siloed organization that the entire bank is potentially relying on, because we know that doesn't scale, right? That's not how startups, scale-ups, these new banks operate. They enable everyone to generate value out of this data. So eventually you want to be in a position where any single person within the bank is able to unlock that gold and create their own innovation cycle on it.
A lot of insight shared today, Thomas. Thank you so much. Thanks for joining the first podcast on your behalf. And I'm very much looking forward to meet you again and talk about AI a bit more deeply.
Thanks for having me.
Cheers. Thanks for listening to Banking Reinvented, a podcast by Backbase. Make sure to follow both Jouk and myself on LinkedIn, where we will be sharing key insights about our journey towards modernizing banking.